In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Making stuff is hard, especially in the entertainment world, where big egos, bigger budgets, and just plain bad luck can make things go horribly wrong. And we're going behind the scenes of these disastrous, never-ending, and often dangerous productions to find out why it was a shit show.
Hello, ordinary people.
How dare you?
This is It Was a Shit Show. My name is Routine Ian, and I'm joined by Typical Clint.
Hello.
And Everyday Ray.
Hello.
We're pretty basic. We're pretty basic here.
Yeah, sorry, guys. You don't have any powers.
I thought I was extraordinary.
Just to your parents.
Oh, that's not me.
Not to your loving
not
husband
my
of
loving no. husband of
10 plus years.
15 no. years.
So while I was making the Indiana Jones video, I was watching one of the last video interviews of Sean Connery. In it, his granddaughter, who is actually the one interviewing him, asked what it would take for him to come out of retirement to make another film. This is when he mentions that this is in my Indiana Jones video. This is when he mentions about talking to Steven Spielberg about doing Indiana Jones 4. Which might have been the only movie he would have come out of retirement for. But the part wasn't important enough. It was just going to be basically a cameo.
A little bit piece, yeah.
Yeah. But when he was asked the question, he says that League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was such a disaster and he hated the director so much, he came to the conclusion that movie studios were now run by idiots.
And yes. He would only come out of retirement if he could slap a couple of women. Yeah.
And movie studios are run by idiots.
So.
Gotta slap everybody.
Well, that's funny that you should say that. We learned a new phrase from Pete Holmes, actually. It's when you want to talk about somebody that has scandals in or controversies, you just say scandal noted and you move on.
Scandal noted.
So that you don't have to address the whole scandal every single time. Yeah. You're just like, look, scandal Kevin
noted,
Spacey,
Sean
scandal
Connor.
Noted. Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
All right.
What did I say about?
I like that.
So Connery didn't want to be part of the film industry anymore. So I knew League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was a shit show. And I remember Clint talking about how much he hates the movie. So much so I thought that was actually going to be on your list of your most hated movies.
Oh, my most hated movies? Yeah. The reason why I think that is because as part of Clint's closet, which I'll bring up right now, is I actually have the comic book that's based on.
Ooh.
Ding.
Oh my God. It's in the
pit. It's in the
cellophane.
The bag. Here,
oh my God.
The bag, yeah. I actually found this when I was cleaning out Clint's closet because of some water damage and home repairs that need to be happening. So I pulled this out and I was like, oh, I need to bring this. I'm glad I found this. I need to bring this for Clint's closet. But the book itself, even though it's written by Alan Moore, who is a weirdo, it's actually a pretty good book, pretty good story, and the movie deviates so far from
that. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about Alan Moore, right? Is it like
isn't historically, I mean, we'll probably get into this, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay. Scandal noted.
Scandal noted. Look, listen, we're going to talk about it. Okay. I will not jump the gun. Did you enjoy the comic book, though?
I like the book. I have the first volume and I have the second volume, and apparently there's like six others that just get super weird and super convoluted. Because, and you'll probably go into this and you'll probably explain it better than I did, but the whole idea is that it's domain free stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Interesting. So that's why the characters are like.
What do you call it? Public domain.
Public
characters.
Domain yeah. characters. Wow.
Well, and it's a great idea, too. It's like, let's take, like, it's the literary cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Kinda.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward through. Ray and I went on vacation, and then a whole bunch of me procrastinating, playing too much Zelda. I finally sat down in earnest to research LXG.
Shut up.
Yeah, that's what it's
smart. It's easy. It's easier.
No, I hate it.
I was researching the film on July 11th. In a complete universal coincidence, that happened to be exactly 20 years to the day since the film's original release in 2003.
20 years?
20 years.
Damn.
I am old, man. I thought,
yeah. Yeah, bro.
So luckily for my research, that was like so many retrospective pieces were coming out within hours of when I was looking stuff up. So that was very nice for me.
Yeah.
How convenient.
That was extraordinarily coincidental.
So today, let's talk League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
A.K.A. LXG. Nerds.
At first, I didn't fancy it. I thought it was a little too tricksy. But having seen a lot of the effects and the sort of movies now, like Lord of the Rings and Matrix, both of which were offered to me, I couldn't understand either of them when I read them.
I think when he first met with the director, in his kind of teasing way, he said, you know, they offered me The Matrix and I didn't understand it, so I turned it down. And they offered me The Lord of the Rings and I didn't understand it, so they turned it down. And I'm not sure I understand this, but I'm not going to turn it down.
This came out in 1999 when the graphic novel series started, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen by Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill. Moore describes it as the Justice League of Victorian England. So the first volume takes place after Bram Stoker's Dracula, where Mina Harker is recruited by James Bond's grandfather, Champion?
I think it's Campion.
Campion Bond, to build a team of extraordinary people. This includes Captain Nemo, Alan Quatermain, Dr. Jekyll, and the Invisible Man.
What is Alan Quatermain from?
The King Solomon's Mine, which is actually pretty good. I've read it. Like,
After I
got this book and I saw the movie, I was like, maybe I should read up on some of these. And so I read like all the books that these are based on, and it's actually a pretty good book. Invisible Man is a really good book though too.
The team is tasked with stopping Fu Manchu's evil plans, but it's revealed that the League's financier is Professor Moriarty.
I guess that.
Yes,
I guess that in the movie. They were like calling him M, and Ian's like, do you get the reference? And I'm like, well, it's Moriarty, right? And he goes,
I was trying to get her to get the M from Bond.
Yeah, he's like, well, no, like M from Bond. And I'm like, well, yeah, duh, but like, he's Moriarty, right? Like, there's no other professor that
could
be.
We get it,
Ray.
You're smarter than us back in 2003.
Although in that movie,
this was 3 days ago. Oh. Yeah. That's when I was smart.
And that reveals like nonsense. What does it mean? It changes nothing.
Well, you know what it felt like as I was kind of watching. I was watching a recap of the movie. You know what it felt like? It felt like we were re-listening to our episode of Empires of the Deep, where Atlas was also the bad guy at the end. Like it made
He's
no goddamn
Silver
sense.
Eye. The bad guy.
Silver Eye.
So ironically, the first volume won the Bram Stoker Award for Best Illustrated Narrative.
Oh.
The second volume takes place during H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. Let's give you an idea of what the comics were like.
Yeah, it goes through history and it adds so many more like literary characters. Hmm. The Easter eggs alone in the books itself is just enormous and like mind-boggling. Like Alan Moore, you've got better things to do, I'm sure. Look at all these.
Like even like crowd shots are like people of like they're all Easter eggs.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Interesting.
Okay, now put your mind inside the great comic book rush of 2000s. We have Blade 2, X-Men, X2, Daredevil, Hulk, Spider-Man. So all those big movies. So this was like the next big get for producer Don Murphy. So he gets the rights for LXG and also Alan Moore's From Hell. And he makes that movie with Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. It was okay.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Was it Heather Graham?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Never seen it, but from what I hear, it's okay movie. Anyway, and then he hires James Dale Robinson to write LXG. Fun fact, he's the only writer on this film. So anything that you're about to think is going to happen during this episode...
it's not 20 writers.
No, it's not. It's only him.
I was gonna say just historically, one? All the movies that we talk about are all like, well, then this writer, well, then that yeah, writer, yeah. And then the script doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope. This is screenwriter James Dale Robinson.
As brilliant as the graphic novel is, it is not a movie, and unfortunately, the reading level of the world has declined. So, introducing the literary characters was something that had to be dealt with head on. He is not wrong.
Yeah, it's only gotten worse.
That was 20 years ago. Yeah. Now people are like, what? What are books?
So they could not get the rights to Fu Manchu.
Probably for the best.
So he was dropped.
What the hell is Fu Manchu even from? Like, I just assumed that was like a racist caricature that just kind of like...
No, he was actually like a character in like books. Like he was like just like an evil...
Well, they're just
but
like,
he was
we need an
evil character.
Chinese man.
Yeah, exactly.
Fu Manchu, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But he was, he was kind of like Moriarty. Like, and okay. He was in a couple of books. So, and then they also couldn't get H.G. Wells, the Invisible Man. So the film only calls him an Invisible Man.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the same name. Because in the book, it's Griffin. In this, it's
Skinner.
So
he's like, I worked with the guy.
I think there was like that kind of like reference to the original. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Rights were so weird. Just like, we couldn't get the Invisible Man, but we have an Invisible Man. Because you can copyright the, but not any.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Robinson's original script was about the League stopping a terrorist from releasing a flesh-eating poisonous gas into New York's newly constructed subway system. But then September 11th happened. And Fox was like, this gas plot could actually happen, so let's not do that. So he changed
it. We don't want to give terrorists any ideas.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. But Fox was also really worried about funding such a big project about a team of only...
Men. Book characters from strictly from books.
White men.
Europeans.
Oh, okay. So I was right. White men.
And requested the addition of a young American character, hence Agent Tom Sawyer.
Oh, I thought they were going to, I thought that was in a reference to Nemo. Like, we got to put Captain Nemo in there because he's Indian or whatever.
This is Clint, you're going to be our Don Murphy.
Okay. Agent Sawyer came about as the result of a stupid studio note that turned out to be brilliant.
Was it?
Yeah. In what way? Explain yourself, Clint.
I mean, it kind of... Here's the thing.
It fits.
It makes sense.
Sure.
You know, but does it... Even though it makes sense, does that make it a good choice?
Yeah. Well, I mean, anything Tom Sawyer say that he's a good shot? I mean, he's not a good shot in the movie.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, so, if anything, his superpower should have been tricking other people into doing the work for him.
Exactly.
That's the superpower.
Yeah.
Just the mastermind.
The whitewashing of the fence with a rifle.
Like, he's, like, sitting there, like, shooting people, and then he's like, here, take over, and then he just, like, fucks off.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how to really do this. I've seen you do it. I mean, you're clearly better.
Sean Connery, you're so much better than me at shooting. How about you shoot these guys? And then he's, like, back there just kicking his feet up, reading a magazine or whatever.
Sipping a mint julep.
Yeah. They got Tom Sawyer all wrong.
Yeah.
Who played him, too? Because I remember the cast.
Shane West.
Yeah. Who the
Walk to Remember.
Yes. A Walk to Remember.
You know what? In high school, people used to say that I looked like Shane West in high school. Not now, obviously, because I'm old and gross. But back then in the high school days.
You had the same nose.
Yeah. I could see it.
I remember people used to say, like, you look like Shane West from... What was the movie you said?
Walk to Remember.
Did you ever see Walk to Remember? People say, like, no, I haven't seen it. Like, well, you look like Shane West. I'm like, oh,
that was
you.
A bunch of girls trying to hit on you.
Yeah, you dummy.
That was a sexy movie for women back then.
I fucked up.
Yeah, you dumbass.
Okay, so director Stephen Norrington was hired to direct the film. He got his start as a VFX artist on films like Aliens and Life Force.
Oh my God, canon!
He directed a low-budget sci-fi film called Death Machine in 94. This is what got him the job to direct Blade in 1998.
Oh, okay. Mm.
So
some motherfuckers always trying to ice skate up
that's fucking that's like,
what does that even mean?
I know, so funny. Now, but feeling overwhelmed by the size of that film, he turned down directing Blade 2, and he returned to low budget with The Last Minute in 2001, which he directed, wrote, produced, and edited, and was never released theatrically. But he was in the because Blade was such a big hit, he was still in the conversation with a lot of people. So, we'll go into the rest of Norrington's filmography later at the end.
I was going to say, because I just was like, not spoiling anything, I just kind of looked at it briefly. I'm like, oh, what? Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, then Sean Connery was their big star that they got.
The get?
The big get at 72 years old to play Alan Quartermain.
Sorry, shut your mouth. He was 72 years old, 20 years. How the fuck? He's so old now.
He's dead.
He's dead.
He died?
He died like a few years ago.
Yeah, like
holy
years
shit,
ago.
You guys.
Like, yeah. 22, like 2020, right?
This is blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He died. What?
Yep.
He's dead in the ground.
Oh my God.
But
Africa won't let him die.
As we
maybe
know.
Maybe Scotland won't let him die.
Yep.
What? In my brain, he was still alive.
Look, so many people were dying of COVID around
that's
that time.
True.
Like, it's probably easy to miss
yeah,
that.
Yeah, put it in the rest of
depressing.
Them.
Okay, moving on.
So why did Sean Connery sign on? So he mentions that...
that is a great question.
He mentions that he turned down Gandalf, Dumbledore, and the architect from the Matrix sequels. Because when he was reading these effects heavy screenplays, he didn't get it. He was like, it was confusing and it just didn't make sense to him. And so he was just like, what is this stupid stuff? So he's kind of alluding to the fact that he didn't want, so he didn't get LXG either. He just like looked at it and was like, I don't get this, but he didn't want to pass up yet another like a huge opportunity.
Right.
Mm.
Mostly for money. Right.
Well, like, yeah, because he probably is like, oh, I don't get this movie for Gandalf. I'm going to pass it up. Then he sees it. He's like, holy shit, that was awesome. He's like, well, I don't get Dumbledore.
Or I don't get it, but it made a shit ton of money.
Well, yeah, that too. So,
which
yeah.
was more along where his brain was at that time.
There you go. So yeah, so he's like, I don't get it. He doesn't take it, makes a shit ton of money. Dumbledore doesn't get it, makes a shit ton of money.
Yeah, exactly.
Classic, renowned films. And then he chooses the one that's
yes, exactly.
This one.
We all know where this is going.
Yeah.
Despite the idea of all these iconic characters potentially being cast as like an all-star cast, right, kind of scenario, Connery was paid $17 million to star.
Wow.
Which forced them to cast the rest with much cheaper actors.
With pennies?
yeah.
Which is why you don't know anybody else in this movie.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly. However, they did get Monica Bellucci for Mina Harker.
Mm.
But she dropped out, quote unquote, last minute to do the Matrix sequels. So she preferred to do that one over.
Smart.
And then was replaced by Peta Wilson, who I don't know before and since.
I know. I was like, I don't know who she is or what she's been in or what she's done or where she went after this movie.
Yeah, I'm sure she's did lots of other TV stuff that we don't watch, right? So, Jenny Ray.
Yes.
Most of this film was made where?
On a soundstage.
Yeah, a lot of it.
With miniatures. With miniatures, a.k.a.
But where?
Tinies. In?
Prague.
Oh my God, I was just there.
Yes, I remember I said, do you know what this place is? And you're like, yeah, of course. And then this place? Both of those locations were in the movie, and I don't think you noticed.
Oh, I probably didn't.
So the library.
What'd you get your... You got your face buried in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, that's true. I was, I paid attention to half of it mostly.
Half of it mostly. That half, mostly there. That 50%, like 80%. But as production started in 2002, historic flooding destroyed $7 million worth of their sets.
Whoa.
Damn.
Including, ironically...
Nemo's sub.
Nemo's sub.
Which did not make any sense anyway. let's all be honest, that fucking thing does not work in the water. You know, how in the hell?
The submarine is like, I think is actually kind of cool looking, but it is so comically large.
It's stupid.
Stupid.
He's like, this is Nautilus, the sword of the ocean. And it comes up out of the Venice Canal. And I was like, the water displacement alone of having that thing in the canal would have flooded Venice. Would have flooded it. Like, you can't just stick a thing in water. The water has to go somewhere. Yeah. The water has to go somewhere. And I was just like, where?
You go, swords are like elegant, like, you know, tools, right? And this thing is this giant like, behemoth.
I thought that was really funny. It's just like when it pops up, you're just like, geez, okay, that's too big. This is production designer Carol Spire talking about the flood.
Not only did we have a studio and workshops filled with 14 feet of water, on our other sets, we also had to deal with the fact that we couldn't get any materials to our set while we were building Venice, and most of our crew of people were at home trying to battle the flood themselves, trying to save their home, or trying to get to work over bridges that were closed. It was a bit of a nightmare, but we managed to cope.
They're just like bailing water out of their own houses.
Yeah. Getting a phone call for the producer, like, you need to come. It's like, bitch, I got my own shit to worry about.
Exactly.
I've got my own stuff going on over here. I don't give a shit about your sets.
So, Sean, it was bad enough that Sean Connery did a public plea on Czech television for donations and assistance.
Mm.
For the crew.
No, for the city.
Right. Yeah, like for the, like, not just for their movie, like, help us make a
no,
movie.
No. He was doing a thing for, like, help flood efforts across the city.
Okay, good. Because I was like, if they just went on and they were just like, we need to rebuild our sets, I'd be like, fuck you.
This is tax write off.
This is the last movie I'll ever do. Please.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And then he
died.
Stop
all with the spoilers.
I'm sorry. This movie's 20 fucking years old, man.
Well, I mean, I apparently didn't know he died. So.
Yeah, so that was a spoiler. There's nothing you can blame on me if she doesn't even fucking know he's dead.
Okay, so production was delayed by 3 weeks, but the release date was not. They instead moved to Malta to shoot the scenes that the crew weren't ready for. So, Jenny Ray, you're going to be our Stuart Townsend.
Ooh.
When we came back, it was like another production. No one knew what was going on. There was no finish date. It was like doing two movies.
I have no idea. Where is he from?
He's British. He's Dorian Gray.
Well, it's a movie. Oh, yeah. Irish. All right.
Damn it. I can't do an Irish accent. Okay, he's just going to have to be British.
Okay. Now, do you guys remember Stuart Townsend from a previous episode?
Yeah, he was going to be Aragorn.
Yep. Okay.
Damn.
Now, you watch that movie and you watch League and you go, thank God.
Yeah.
We dodged that bullet.
There was one line from him that we laughed at, and that was it.
I got to nail you again.
Oh, he's like, I'm so glad I got to nail you one last time, or whatever.
When he's fighting Mina.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, they come back, they go to Malta. It was like terrible, and then when they come back, they're like, things just take an awkward turn. Things just go bad. All right, so one of the first things was the model making company behind the scale model of Venice completely dropped the ball. They showed up and were just like, they were giving up like false status reports. Like, yeah, everything's good. Everything's good. And they got there and they're like, what the fuck? Like, it was none of it was
like
done and it was
done.
Terrible.
No, it wasn't even Venice.
Yeah.
This is Paris.
This is
Venice, LA.
Yeah. This is Amsterdam.
So it forced the production to find the last remaining model shop that had availability. And those guys did great.
It was the same model guys who did Team America?
I have no idea. But Connery was currently in a lawsuit with another production company, someone completely unrelated, about an unmade movie, saying they misled him in their ability to actually finance the film. He was claiming that was a scheme.
Just he was suing
them.
Okay, so he was suing them, not them suing Connery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is his current state of mind about the film industry and being in disarray. Now, Jenny Ray, you're going to do another accent. You're going to be our Jason Fleming.
Oh, what's his? He's another accented person?
I think he's a British dude.
Oh, yeah, my God. I only have one English. British accent.
He's English.
Big Sean.
Yeah, he calls him Big Sean.
Isn't that a rap artist?
This is Jason Fleming, who plays Dr. Jekyll.
Big Sean was paid a lot of money, but wasn't massively interested in making films. He wanted to be playing golf.
That's actually kind of close to him.
Oh my God, really? Yeah. Oh my God, thank you so much.
So Big Sean didn't really care about being in this movie from the get.
Right, so he's just like, I'm 72, I'm fucking done, this movie sucks.
Better get me a big payday.
Right, the things aren't done. Also, I'm pissed about this other movie and I'm in a lawsuit.
Yeah, so on the first day of filming, Connery instantly classifies Norrington as insane.
He's insane.
Oh, we're going to get to Clint's Sean Connery.
Yes.
Being an effects guy, Norrington was not the greatest actor's director. Clint, this is Don Murphy talking about Stephen Norrington.
He's American, right? I could just use my regular
voice. Yes, okay. Yes, yeah.
Stephen is an immensely talented guy who comes from a visual effects background. He's extremely good with action and visual effects. I'm not sure he's necessarily a people person.
This is Sean Connery on Stephen Norrington.
Unfortunately, he wasn't certified before we started because he would have been arrested for insanity.
What? The last time I checked, you were not a doctor, Sean Connery. Okay. Also, last time I checked, you were alive, so...
So Norrington got the last laugh on that one. Oh, man. So, but also, like, being insane isn't, like, you know, illegal.
Right?
Again, yeah. But this is also just Sean Connery that's saying this.
Well, and also, like, what was, like, okay, granted, like, the movie is not a good movie, right? But what did Norrington do that made Sean Connery think that he was insane?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Sometime in November,
awesome. We're so good. The press visits
the set, and the crew are not shy about talking to the press and just like mentioning how awkward and cold and like tense the set is. Like it's just bad vibes all around.
Everybody's just walking on eggshells.
Yeah. So they say Norrington and Connery fought constantly. Connery wants to get his stuff done. He just wants to get in there, act, do his thing, and move on. But Norrington is too fixated on lighting and cameras and the effects and stuff like
that. He's directing.
But he's not focusing on anything what the actors are doing, right? Okay. So people are saying Norrington is not paying attention to what matters, and Connery is just being old and crotchety and sick of crap like this.
Sure.
So it was described as an...
go and play golf.
Yeah. It's described as an old-timer versus a Hollywood rebel.
Yeah.
Clint, you'll be our Sean Connery here. This is him when he was asked about how the shoot was going on set.
It's been difficult. Very, very difficult. There's no question about it. There have been differences of opinions about almost everything. Professional differences, personal differences, you name it.
So
personal differences. Norrington one day is just like, you know what? I don't care for golf. And he's just like, ah! Flips the table over.
He goes, there's like, fuck, he's like, golf.
How fucking dare you, Norrington?
He's like, Norrington comes, you know what? Roger Moore was better.
No, I really like.
He's just like
Timothy Dalton.
Yeah,
just walking around pushing his buttons all day.
You know, have you heard about this upstart named Daniel Craig?
Yeah. My God, I just saw Lord of the Rings. Holy shit! I'm glad I didn't pass that up.
Yeah.
Okay, so one day, according to reports, Norrington did not like the look of an elephant gun. So, and
like the big, wide, like the comically, like cartoony. Like, you think of an elephant gun, I think of like the ones from like the cartoons, right? The big long rifle with the big.
From the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and he stopped filming until this was solved, until he found the gun that worked, which took the entire day. So, Connery is fuming in his trailer, just like, I'm sick of this guy. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing.
I'm 72 years old. I was the last dragon.
So, he eventually just confronts Norrington. They get in this screaming match, and Norrington just gets fed up and goes, I'm sick of it. Come on. I want you to punch me in the face.
Oh, my God.
So, contrary to rumors, They did not fight. So this turned into this whole thing that they got into a fist fight on the set.
It did not happen. Elderly abuse?
Right?
Would it have been? Well, I mean, if you're being abused by an elder person, is that still elderly abuse?
I think it goes abuse, both ways.
Yeah. They're like, it's not exactly how it works, but
Connery has experience in slapping.
He was gonna get slapped so hard.
Yeah.
So they did not fight. Connery just turned his back and left.
Mm.
Jenny Ray, this is Jason Fleming on The Feud.
I think Big Sean's instincts were right and deserved to be listened to. On the other side, I think Norrington was really creative and a really huge character. He's a filmmaker and he had an opinion. And it was important that his concept for how it should be was listened to. I don't think either of them were listened to enough, by each other or by the studio.
That sounds like a very pragmatic, like, rational way of viewing the whole situation.
Yeah. So
I'm happy and proud of this.
It's like,
this Fleming.
Hey guys, let's all just listen to each other.
Yeah.
Big Sean, come on.
Come on, Sean. Big Sean.
Seriously, that's a rap artist, right? I'm not stupid here. Right?
I don't know. Sean? I don't know the raps. I couldn't tell you.
Okay. After the film was done shooting, Norrington penned a letter to all the producers he was currently in talks with about like other films to be made. And he said he was done with Hollywood. So when the film reached the editing room, Norrington could care less. He was only involved for about 40% of just the editing.
Jeez.
He did not work on the visual effects. He did not screen the film for the studio. And he essentially just stopped showing up.
Just washed his hands. Moved on.
So according to Fox, Norrington fulfilled his editing duties. But editor Paul Rubel took over to finish the film to meet its July 11th release date. This is producer Don Murphy on Norrington.
He was really happy with the way things were going, but he never would have been ready by July 11th. He never believed the July 11th date was real. He never believed the hard financial budget number was real. He couldn't be bothered by limitations, and the studio is only concerned about limitations.
He was going like, I'm just an artist.
I'm just doing my thing. I'm getting punched in the face by Scottish old men. I'm an artist.
You know what? Fuck it. I don't care anymore.
You know what?
Anymore.
I never thought it was going to be done by July 11th. I was just going to take as much time as I wanted.
Yeah. They know me. I made Blade. So according to Connery, he was heavily involved in helping salvage the final edit.
Showing up and giving opinions, I guess, is probably what that means.
Slapping
people for not doing
good evening.
Job.
Listen to me.
That editor needs a good slap on the ass.
Multiple production members tried to get Fox to delay the movie into fall, which A, would give them more time to finish the visual effects, and B, not to have to compete with other big tentpole movies, summer movies of 2003. But Fox was committed to July because they also had Master and Commander with
Russell Crowe
coming out for the fall. So they were like, no, we're not going to push it. So those same people are also amazed that the film came out as well as it did. One crew member says, most of what is being shot is unusable. Most of this movie is going to end up on the cutting room floor if it ever gets finished.
Wow. Oof.
That's what someone said during their set visits.
Just like a random crew member.
Yeah.
Just like craft services is like, yeah, this is
I've been on a lot of things. There's some shit going on here.
One of like the Teamsters is just like, I've been on a lot of sets and this is unsalvageable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Jenny Ray, you're going to be, this is Robinson, the screenwriter.
Okay.
About the final product.
The studio wanted something a little bit flashier, more of a summer movie. Steven wanted something that was more introspective. I was relieved to find out that even though the complexity of the characters had been whittled down, the shadings of those complications still remained.
Just three scenes of a character arc was kind of like what it really came down to, right?
It really did feel like they were like, I know that he's saying like, I'm really surprised that we managed to do both. And it's like, but barely. And not well. Because, yes.
Enough to, like, talk about it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you could see that they were trying to add some complexity to the characters by, like, having that moment with Hyde where he's, like, wrestling with things. And then, like, there was, like, the love story with Gray and Mina, you know. But it's, like, it was, like, blah, 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 anyway. And then back to explosions. Like, it was surface level.
Yeah, I mean, like, in Hyde's, like, sudden turn of, like, we can do this. We can save the ship. Like, it was kind of, like, came out of nowhere. It wasn't even like a fight between the two of them.
Right.
Like, instead of him going, like, them talking to into it together or debating it, it was just like, it was instantly like,
yeah,
gone. I mean, I do like that there was a little bit of stuff in there, like little breadcrumbs of like a saboteur, but that reveal comes like way too early. And then the idea that nobody can trust Skinner because he's invisible and naked.
A thief. Don't forget a thief. Yeah.
And so, like, I did like those little things, but there's very few. Very few.
Right.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Stuart Townsend after seeing the film.
My thought was, Jesus, was that really worth 6 months of my life?
This is Stuart Townsend talking,
too. It was not.
I don't like Stuart Townsend, but that's a funny quote.
That is really good. Was this worth 6 months of my life?
Which Stuart, is kind of like what we always talk about. Was it worth it, like, yeah, just going through all that shit just to have, like a movie that's so mediocre? Just, yeah. Yeah. Norrington did not attend the film's premiere.
What? The director?
Director did not go to the film's premiere.
He was done. He peaced out.
Yeah. When asked...
What did he move on to after this?
Like, we'll get to that. Okay, okay. We'll get to that.
I'm not saying like, well, what do you have
yeah,
to go to?
Yeah.
Like,
what are you so busy?
Yeah.
So when asked where he was, Sean Connery replied,
"Have you checked the local asylum?"
Damn, Sean. Big Sean. Damn.
Big Sean. And then when pressed about Norrington being gone, he said,
"Ask me about someone I like, will you? Everyone else in the film was a pleasure to work with, not him."
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Did Sean Connery kill this guy? Holy shit.
Maybe.
Oh my God.
We'll
never know because he's dead now, as we established.
I think about Connery being around the same age as like my grandparents, and like the way that like my grandparents would like talk about other people, and this is just very par for the course for someone of his generation. Like,
yeah,
talk to me about someone I like.
Yeah, like, just very blunt. Yeah,
he's
very
got
blunt.
Like no fucks left.
No, yeah, absolutely not. Yeah,
yeah.
That's so funny.
He's Big Sean.
I love it when he calls me Big Sean.
Now talk to Little Sean.
Yeah. No, just put Little Sean away. Put him away.
Or is it Bigger Sean?
Sean's a grower, not a shower.
They call him perfectly adequate Sean.
He's proportionate.
He's average. The national average.
He's
Sean.
He's extraordinary, Sean.
I used to call him the Dragon Heart.
Oh, man, we could keep going on that one for a while. He's got a license to kill. So, okay. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen released July 11th, 2003. It opened against, which may sound really silly, but at the time, this was a massive gamble. Guesses.
2003.
Was it a Fast and Furious movie?
No.
Was it
Disney?
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean, oh. The Curse of the Black Pearl. At that time, that was like, they spent a shit ton of money on this movie.
Yeah.
Is this going to work, let alone make money?
Right.
And so.
And seven movies later.
Yeah, exactly.
Billions of dollars grossed or whatever.
Yep.
So Fox argued they were not competing with Pirates as, quote, Its film offers a highbrow alternative for discriminating moviegoers looking for an original film, not a sequel or film that began life as a theme park ride.
Oh, just because you're based on some yeah. fancy books, you think you're better than Pirates of the yeah. Caribbean?
Meanwhile, Bob Iger, fuck you, I'm going to buy you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they forgot that they had just mentioned that, like, audiences were illiterate. So, like, they don't give a shit
yeah.
if your characters are based on, like, fancy, like, book characters.
Yeah.
Well, I think it just goes to show that you can make an adaptation of something as silly as a theme park ride and still make it good.
Yeah, I mean...
And like, but, with, like, with this, like, you can make an adaptation of a comic book and it could still be shit.
Yes, yeah. exactly. Even if you have a blueprint,
yeah.
literal blueprint.
It's like, you know? you don't need storyboard artists. Like, yeah. the storyboard's right here.
Yeah.
and you have the screenplay, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
The story arc. So, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Alex G, grossed $23 million the first weekend against Pirates, $46 million.
Ooh.
Alex G's budget was somewhere between $75 and $95 million. It made $66 million in the U.S., but a total of $179 million worldwide.
So
it wasn't really a bomb.
Like, it made money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Pirates, on the other hand, grossed $305 million in the U.S.
Jeez.
And $654 million worldwide.
You know, I'm thinking about my movies, or the Movies to Live For piece that we did for Patreon, and you mentioned that you're surprised that I didn't have this on my list. I think I blocked it out at the time, because now that we're talking about it and I'm thinking about it, I remember as a joke, because I would talk about how much I absolutely disliked the movie. I would talk about so much to my brother that as a joke, my brother bought it for me on my Apple.
Yeah.
He bought it for me as a joke on my Apple movies. And so now it's like...
permanently there.
It's in my library. So I look at it every time I go through. Like, I'm like, oh, this is a good movie. This is good. I'll watch this movie. Then Alex G show up. I'm like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
This piece of shit.
So I remembered I own this movie.
Yeah. And you didn't do your homework.
20 years ago,
right? Rotten Tomatoes, 17% from critics, 44% from audience.
I feel like the Rotten Tomatoes should be like more like... not seven, because I've seen 17% movies, and I feel like this might be just a slightly, like, I don't think it's
17%.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get into it, but, like, the first half is actually not that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The visual effects are definitely impressive.
Yeah, some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, it goes way off.
It does. It really does. Like,
but I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah,
I think
it's pretty bad.
I think it's got a bigger, more of a reputation of just being a shitty movie than it actually is. Okay. Later that year, producer Martin Pohl and screenwriter Larry Cohen sued Fox for stealing their idea, claiming they had been pitching a concept between the years of 1993 to 1996 about a team-up of public domain characters. Their film was called Cast of Characters, which is terrible.
It's a terrible title.
Yeah.
They allege Fox cut them out of the deal.
Then wait, what did they shorten that to? Cock? Cast of Characters, a.k.a. cock.
Guys, think about it. On the poster, cock.
A big cock on the poster.
On the poster. Just huge. The biggest you've ever seen.
Right there is Big Sean.
Big Sean presents cock.
Big Sean and cock. So they allege Fox cut them out of the deal, then freely gave Alan Moore the idea as a smokescreen so as not to raise suspicions of their theft. Their proof of this was that Fox was hiring screenwriters in 1998 to make the film, and this was announced in the trades, like Variety. Despite the graphic novel not being released until 1999. So, Alan Moore, lovely... understanding,
just the
caring
nicest guy.
Alan Moore.
Loves people and humanity and
gave
just
a
great dude.
Gave a 10-hour deposition stating, if I had raped and murdered a school bus full of retarded children after selling them heroin, I doubt that I would have been cross-examined for 10 hours.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty lengthy for something that's just basically like...
Did you steal this idea?
A rights charge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he was. I bet he was such a delight to interview for that.
The suit was settled out of court, And this enraged Moore so much because he's not able to publicly defend himself, whether or not he was given the idea or not. So he just can't say.
What you're saying, though, is that like part of the terms of the settlement was that he can't talk about it.
Yeah.
So everyone's just like, meh, like, we don't know.
Yeah. We might never know. Okay. Stephen Norrington is the king of shit show productions. I swear to God, this is ridiculous. especially development hells. So in 2000, this movie came out in 2003. So Norrington was first set to direct Ghost Rider in 2000. So that's how early, because that was right after Blade, but then he did this. But Ghost Rider didn't happen until 2007. In 2001, he was set to direct Freddy vs. Jason, which was later made in 2003. And then also in 2001, The Hands of Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu. So he was working with Abi Arad about making that movie long before it came out, finally, in 2021. In 2002, he was the first director for the still-in-development hell live-action Akira movie.
Oh, yeah, Akira? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that...
Right now, I think it's Taika. I don't know. When that movie comes out, we'll do an episode about it, if that ever happens. In 2001, he was to remake Clash of the Titans. Didn't come out until 2010. In 2008, he was the first director to set to remake the still-in-development hell, The Crow.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
And that one has been made, and they're looking for a distributor. Last it was
is
I
that
heard about it.
Bill Skarsgård?
I think it's Alex Skarsgård, but might be.
It's a Skarsgård.
A Skarsgård.
It's a Skarsgård.
But they filmed it. They filmed it, and I think it completed like 2 years ago.
Even with a Skarsgård?
Even with a Skarsgård.
Everyone's like,
We're Skarsgård out.
Look, we love a Skarsgård, but not the Crow. Not for the Crow.
We love a Skarsgård.
And in 2010, he was to make something called The Lost Patrol. Norrington has yet to make another feature film.
Really? So he was so he made this movie, and him and Sean Connery like butted heads a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Connery is dead.
As we've established.
Spoiler alert.
So this film was released in 2003. He couldn't deign to give a fuck to do anything else after he filmed it and did 40% of the editing. Since then, he's been hired to do this maybe, nah. Do this maybe, no. Do that maybe, no.
Over,
and he hasn't
and
made
over,
anything
over.
Since.
Nope. Not.
As a director, has he done other stuff? Like, because his background special effects, has he done anything else?
I don't know what he's doing. Brad Dourif actually gave it the thing, said that he's making a stop motion animation thing in his basement. But he was like, it's going to take.
Well, so
stand
am I.
In the place where you were. That's it.
And that was on Parks and Rec. That's as far as he got.
He sold it.
I spent 2 weeks on that.
Yeah.
It's only 6 seconds long.
Well, according to Brad Dourif, he said that, like, based off of what he's doing with it, he's like, it's not going to be done for like 20 years.
Wow.
Right.
So I have no idea what he's doing.
When you do one shot a day for a stop motion animation, it's going to take you
20 years. Yeah.
Yeah. LXG would be the last live action film for Sean Connery. This is Sean Connery on why he gave up on being in film.
I was fed up with the idiots and the ever widening gap between people who know how to make movies and the people who greenlight the movies.
Hmm.
So yeah, he just got sick of it and walked away. But in 2005, Connery returned to the role of James Bond in From Russia with Love, the video game, at the age of 75. Based off of the making of that game, he really enjoyed doing that.
That's good. I'm glad that he got one last hurrah as Bond, and it was a good experience for him.
Yeah.
And then, as we all know, the next thing he did was that he died.
Yeah, he died, yeah.
In 2012, he came out of retirement to voice the title role in Scotland's first computer animated feature film, Sir Billy. In the United States, it's called Guardian of the Highlands.
Hmm.
This movie is on par with Food Fight.
Oh
my God.
Also entirely on YouTube.
Wow. We gotta watch it.
Yeah,
we're doing that later. Same year, but it is awful.
Same year as Food Fight?
Yeah, same year, 2012.
Goodness.
It is like the same kind of level of like animation, it looks unfinished and terrible.
Is there a greasy dick weasel?
He's kind of the greasy dick weasel.
I was like, unless you count.
I'm called Big Sean in the movie.
Okay. Sean Connery died in 2020.
As we all know.
As we all know.
Which
as
Jenny Ray was letting let us know about.
Knowledge.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Lastly, in May of last year, Disney announced another attempt at League of Extraordinary Gentlemen as a Hulu exclusive film. No other updates on that.
Mm.
All right. Was it worth it?
Hmm.
I mean, I'm going to say no because it's like it's such a forgettable like movie.
I think I can agree. If people had like gotten like hurt on it or if like, I mean, natural disasters aside with Prague flooding, you know, but I think I agree. Like I could have lived the last 20 years without having seen this movie.
And, or having it in your Apple queue.
Yeah. I mean, the
can't
book,
you just like delete it?
I probably can. I just haven't. Yeah. I mean, the book is great. I don't like what they did with the Invisible Man in the book because he turns into like a rapist bastard. Like it's
Moore style.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I could have lived without this being made. I mean, if Disney wants to take it and do like a TV series, like, I think that might be cool. If they want to try it out again, that might be cool. But I don't think this movie was worth it. I mean, Stuart Townsend was out 6 months of work.
Yeah.
Like, I had 6 months of my life.
Gave him something
to
do.
I was thinking, like, yeah, what else were you doing, Stuart?
No, not at Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, certainly not. Neither was Sean Connery, by the way. The idea is kind of cool, right? Like, sort of like a agency of like secret supernatural people and like kind of Victorian style. And then I was like, well, we kind of got that with Kingsman. Like, Kingsman has, like, a lot of vibe, like, those kind of same vibes.
Yeah.
And, like, Kingsman was just so much better. And I know, like, Kingsman is more future, right? And this is, like, actual kind of Victorian era.
Yeah.
And so I still think that could be cool to make a movie like that and to have, you know, and I'm not opposed to even having, like, famous literary figures, although the famous literary figures that they put in there were so random. When you said like, oh, it's because they were from public domain, I was like, that completely makes sense because there is no other world in which anyone would choose those people to be in a movie together unless it's because they didn't want to pay somebody rights. But it's like, dude, pay somebody fucking rights and like do the movie justice, you know, like have actually like good, interesting characters in there.
Yeah. It's funny because what you said, you fell asleep and we only watched the first half. And the first half is just fine. It's not bad, but it's just fine.
Yeah.
And then we turned it off the moment they arrive in Venice.
Yeah.
And then we started it up the like 2 or 3 days, the next day, I don't remember, later on. And we started up and the movie goes off the fucking rails.
It's bonkers.
It just goes like they show up in Venice to stop the bombs. And immediately they get there and the bombs go off. Like, there's not even a moment of them, like, trying to get it to stop it.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even like, we found the bombs, and then it goes off or whatever.
It's just the docks.
Like, we're here, and then they explode.
Yeah, basically that fucking ship took too long to get there, probably because it's huge.
Captain Nemo, we can't fit the Nautilus in the docks.
Doing a 400,000 point turn inside one of the canals.
To get into a canal. That's probably why. But then, so not only do the bombs go off the second they arrive in Venice, their fucking plan for how to, like, combat the destruction of Venice is they're like, oh, so what we're going to do is we'll set off another bomb in Venice at the opposite side, and, like,
the two will cancel each other out.
And I'm like, that is not how fucking bombs work. That is just not how bombs work, I'm pretty sure.
And it's
like the pressure of the blast from our bomb will like hit the blast of the other bomb and it'll just be like, and then like it'll stop.
Well, listen, Nemo is a scientific genius. If Nemo says it'll work.
But then like all you've done is you've like bombed one half of Venice and then bombed the other half of Venice.
And they're like, we saved all these people. And they're like, how many people were in those buildings that when it collapsed?
Yeah.
And then there's just like that really dumb moment when Dorian Gray's like, Skinner? No, it was me. Yeah. Like, it's the most stupid line. And then he doesn't even kill the guy. He shoots him a bunch of times and then leaves him. And then Ishmael has enough strength to get out and go, oh, by the way, it was Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
Like, staggers out. And he's like, oh, I've been shot 7 times.
And then he jumps in the most nonsense escape vehicle. That's just a half a bubble. Blades. And you're like, how does
this
that
skate
work?
Pod? Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, again, physics, and they're like, ah, fuck physics. We don't give a shit.
And then they immediately
engineering.
They go into the ship, and he's like, "This is us." And he points at the most nonsensical map, and according to that map, they're going 5,000 miles an hour. The pod is going the same speed, and it's
like
just
they've crossed the entire ocean in 2 seconds.
Yeah, multiple times. Yeah. And then the place blows up. And then they're just like, oh, we just need to pull a valve and that will fix all the holes. Like, and then the ship is floating again.
It's the main valve hole.
Of course.
But it was like Professor Moriarty just like gives off his like whole speech. And it was like, why did you make this video? Why not just sink him and kill him? Like
that record, the Victrola. Yeah, it was not even, it's not a video. There was no such thing as video. Right?
That's true, but they were watching a video.
No, that was just for the benefit of the audience. They were playing a record.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No. They were just playing a record, so they were just listening. Hearing. They were just hearing them explain the whole plot. And then for the benefit of the audience, because it's not interesting to have a bunch of people standing around listening to audio, they were like, we'll do a device. And the device will be that we will put like fake old-timey like black and white footage up here so that you can imagine
that's what they're saying.
What they looked like when they were saying these things. When really they were probably schlubbing around a bunch of microphones like we are currently.
Yeah.
You know what they should have just done is just done that same bit in The Great Mouse Detective where Ratigan he's got that record playing at the end of the record. That's when they die. And just have Vincent Price singing goodbye so soon. That's what they should have done.
Better use of a Victrola. Better movie. Better use of Sherlock Holmes characters, quite frankly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I think there's an interesting idea in there, but not worth it. Okay, follow-ups.
We have follow-ups? All right, let's get into it. Following up on the American Graffiti podcast episode, at JohanSong3207 said, OMG, my beer just shot out of my nose when Ray did the Coppola Godfather thing. You come to me on the day of my friend's movie premiere.
That was so funny.
It's all over my keyboard now. Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, there you go.
A lot of people pointed that one out.
Yeah.
That was...
Sorry about your keyboard, but you're welcome.
I still, like, will laugh about that, too. Like, because you two edit the shit out of it, so you listen to them all the time, but I'll go back and re-listen to the episodes just for fun. And every time I hear that, I'm like, oh, my God, that was so fucking funny. That was so great.
There are times where people, like, will quote things, like, later on, like, from older episodes. Like, oh, my God, that was so funny. I'm like,
I have no memory of this place. All right, moving over to cats. A story that we missed, apparently, was that Tom Hooper did not know what catnip is.
Yeah. So people pointed this out, and then I found this. So basically... Tom Hooper was showing up to Taylor Swift's house to show her how the effects were going to work and getting her on board. And her dad was there. I guess her dad's her manager or whatever. And he was just like, oh my gosh, like it'd be really funny if like there's a scene where you like you like all the cats get like high on catnip. And Tom Hooper had no idea.
Again.
Really?
Yeah.
Does not understand cats.
Does not understand cats.
Which is odd for a cat in a man suit.
Yeah, what's catnip?
Or see, he's just pretending like he doesn't know because he doesn't want people to know he's a cat in a man suit. Yeah. All right. So a lot of people also pointed out that Miranda Cosgrove sings Memory in the scene from School of Rock because we were talking about like...
So many people.
We were like, where the hell do we know this song from? And everyone was like, School of Rock. And it's like, yes...
I don't.
But also,
it might be.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe, but also maybe not.
Some people said that like
we watched School of Rock with the kids like literally like 2 weeks ago, and it's like when Jack Black's trying to get kids to sing, and she goes, she's real quick. Memory all alone in the moonlight. Yeah, super quick.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that's where I got it from, but then some people are like, maybe it was from like the VHS trailers for the recorded performance of it. And then I watch those and memory's not in it.
It is for a little bit, yeah.
So if it is, it's musical. It's not the lyrics. Mm-hmm. The ones I watched, it never had the lyrics in it.
Somebody in Discord, by the way, if you want to be in our Discord, go find us on Patreon, posted a video and they were like, remember these? And I watched it and it was like that scene in Ratatouille where you're like, transported backwards.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, I do remember those.
I remember those, yeah.
It was like that ad for Cats, like, it's coming to VHS, was like in front of so many movies in like the 90s.
Yeah.
But that did have memory in it.
Okay, yeah. Maybe I need to watch that one.
Yeah. So there were lots of fans of the stage play and VHS recorded performances, but hardly anyone unironically liking the movie.
I remember there was one, we had one YouTube commenter, I think, who did say, really? Like, I legitimately like this movie.
That's why I said there was hardly anyone. Yeah.
One person.
But it was like a lot of people were like real big fans.
The musical?
The musical.
So. I like to think that every movie out there has at least one person who legitimately loves likes the movie.
Yep.
I think I mentioned this in Discord too, where I said something like, yeah, watching like the old ads for like the recorded stage performance, I could see like if I went and saw it on stage on Broadway and like the spectacle of it, I'm like, yeah, I could see how that would be entertaining because I'm not necessarily going to care as much about like having a plot, right? I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm just here to see like really cool dancing and really cool singing and like cool sets and costumes because like that's a huge part of like a stage performance is just the specialness of the spectacle of it.
Yeah,
so,
the theater of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so like I could see how it would be more entertaining as a theatrical play, but like as a movie, no.
Nah.
Nah. All right, at C. Thella said, missed opportunity to point out that the Meow Mix commercial was a better musical than this. Yeah. So, the song is way more memorable.
I sing the Meow Mix
constantly. You know,
more than I sing Memory.
Yeah. Exactly.
My kids will be downstairs doing, you know, whatever they're doing as kids, and I'll just start singing, I want chicken, I want liver, meow mix, please deliver. And they know it's time for dinner.
And then you shake.
And I feed them in a bowl.
Yeah.
I just, in one bowl.
Yeah, I just tap it on the side of the stairs, and they all know to come running.
Oh, boy. All right, couple random updates. At KBR7171 said that Murderer's Row is not a reference to people who kill. It's a nickname for the 1927 Yankees lineup, which was very good. They murdered opposing pitchers. So saying a Murderer's Row is calling a group of people very talented.
There you go. You were questioning that.
Yeah, I was like, well, because we say that all the time where like people are like, oh, it was a Murderer's Row of screenwriters or a Murderer's Row of blah, blah. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, what does that mean? So I did not know.
Sports analogies.
So there you go. It's a baseball reference.
Ah, baseball. America's pastime, right?
Sure.
Just like mom and apple pie.
Is mom a pastime?
I don't know. Like American. As American as mom American. And apple pie. I don't know.
Mom's apple pie.
This sounds really gross.
That Pokeball guy said, Clint is the best part of this podcast.
Oh, no. What?
Oh.
I banned him, so he's not allowed to chat, put any more comments on the channel.
I thought maybe you would just comment on his comment. Who?
I generally do that.
Yeah, I know.
All the time.
You don't think I don't read those comments? I read those comments. Oh, but thank you so much. What was his name?
At that Pokeball guy.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks, guy.
Thank you.
Some review highlights. At Poolboy Official 7148 said, really love the podcast. Ran through every episode within a week. Good. That's a lot of us. I don't even listen to myself that much. Oof. Good work, guys. Can't wait for more.
Even I don't do that.
Yeah.
I love the sound of my own voice.
Bro.
That's impressive.
At Anti-Toast the Second.
Remember him? One of our first commenters.
Oh, no, I don't. But I'm also like, what do you have against
toast? I would remember if he was anti-toast the first.
I'm pro-toast. Pro-toast the third. All right, anti-toast the second says, the thing with your podcast is that it's too goddamn addicting. I see you've uploaded and I think, oh, I can just watch the little opening snippet thing. It's always incredible. So I think maybe I can watch the first 15 minutes. I end up laughing so hard that I lose track of time and I'm 45 minutes in realizing I'm too late. I say, fuck it, and end up watching the whole thing. I said this like it's a problem, but it really isn't. At Love Hate Comments says, you guys have nailed the behind the scenes bit thanks to Ian's research and a good sense of narrative structure and how he unveils everything gradually in an episode. mixed with Ray and Clint's insanely funny banter and thoughtful opinions. Love seeing the YouTube notification on my phone for one of your episodes. Please continue to make these, and if things allow in the future, yes, do consider a video format. As I mentioned, in the far future. like the antagonists of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen when they were recording their villain monologues. Just schlubbing around some microphones.
Yeah.
Just
to picture us standing around talking to a Victrola.
Yeah.
In our Victorian outfits.
In black and white.
Looking very picturesque.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's we'll just hire some actors to just like lip sync, like some really attractive actors just lip sync everything we say. Mm.
We'll cast Shane West for me.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
He's got nothing else going.
Well, look, if you are interested in seeing what any of us actually look like, might I recommend you go to Patreon and mm-hmm. sign up for our stuff, because then you can see Clint's closet where I actually do videos of me with my collection of shit.
Yep.
I'm not as handsome as I sound.
Face for radio.
Yep. All right. And then Risen Empire said, I've enjoyed each and every video and podcast you've uploaded, and this morning I finally caught all the way up. Thanks for the wonderful chats over the last few weeks. Very much looking forward to future content. Clint, I think your Superman cape shirt sounds awesome. Don't let Ian and Ray take your lunch money too often.
Speaking of which, you haven't paid up.
Yeah, speaking of which, give us your lunch money.
Do you want to do the handstand by yourself, or do we need to do it?
Lift it up, right?
Jingle, jingle, jingle.
Sometimes
jingle.
I do think about that shirt, and I think about sometimes making another one. It'd be so easy.
Even without your mom? Or is that including your mom's sewing?
I got my own sewing machine.
Oh, that's right. We were talking about this. We do have a few Patreon shout outs. We have the newest, the trades. The trades just came in. Just got my magazines. And I have some gossip for you about these five meddling executives.
Ooh, I can't wait.
Well, I mean, the first one is Anthony Navarro. But like, okay, let's just say they are not a meddling executive that is keeping up the writers and actors strike, okay? So he's one of good people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are the meddling executives who are like, let's have talks. Like, I'll also come down to the picket line with you.
Right.
I'm going to meddle in your protesting, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For like Anthony's thing, he's like, you know, I do want you guys to be paid more. But I'm going to put, like, salt water on your hot dog and, you know, just, like, sloppy it up.
Yeah. Slop him up. Sloppy steaks.
Look, we got to keep – he's always thinking, look, like, we do want to pay them better. We just got to keep them a little bit humble. So,
take them down a little peg.
Yeah. So let's take their food and just, like, put it in a blender. Like, that's what your per diem is.
And it's for the whole day.
Yeah.
Like, it's one whole – it's your blended – all your meals in one blended drink.
But I'll pay you a living. I'll pay you a living wage though, and negotiate really good terms for like residuals and stuff like that. But you gotta eat a hot dog shake.
It's all about balance, you know.
It's like maybe he's into mukbang. We don't know. He just wants to watch you eat it. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't judge. We're not here to kink shame.
Yeah, no.
Our next meddling executive is Garrett.
Not your brother.
Not my brother.
Not our friend.
Our friend.
Just
this is
a different
entirely
Garrett.
Different Garrett.
The third, the only other Garrett
in
the world.
Yes,
there's only three.
There's only three Garretts, and he is one of three. Which is great because we have association with all three of them. Our friend, and then this
and
Garrett.
Yeah,
that's his only claim to fame is just being the third Garrett.
The only executive named Garrett.
Yeah, people walk up to him, just give him money. They're like, I want you to produce this because you're a Garrett. Yeah.
I heard that they're were like, one of three Garretts in
that's
the whole world.
That's a strong male name. Have some money.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want with it. And he's like, gosh, thanks very much. I'm going to go meddle in some movies.
Right.
Yeah.
And also maybe a podcast. Thank you, Executive Garrett, for meddling in our podcast and being part of our Patreon.
Right. Being part of our friend, the three. I'm glad we have our Infinity Stone of Garrett.
The next meddling executive we have is Ducky Freeloader, who is the top trust fund baby of all the trust fund babies. We call him Lucky Baby Ducky.
It's the opposite of our executive who had like the Scrooge McDuck like money tank, right?
Yes.
Like this Ducky is like freeloading off of parents, the system. I don't know.
Yeah. His whole office is just a bathtub.
Yeah.
Yeah. With just the ducks.
Yeah.
Just yeah. The-
And he just has Ernie playing in the background the whole time.
Rubber ducky. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
You ask what they're doing and they'll go, just freeloading.
Yeah, just freeloading.
Just freeloading.
What have you been up to lately? You know, freeloading. He has his name on every single trust fund in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, just as like a little subsection. Like,
yeah.
My, like, you know, some rich guy is like, I'm going to give all my kid, like, this is my kid's trust fund. And then a little asterisk, like, and Ducky Freeloader.
Ducky Freeloader.
It gets this, you know, percentage.
That's like, actually really smart because, like, by doing that, if you take a small enough percentage of, like, all of the world's trust funds, like, maybe you got a stew going.
Yeah.
You got a lot of money.
Yeah.
You got a bathroom.
You got a bathtub full of cash.
Yeah. You got an office full of bath water.
And some of that freeloading money is coming our way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So thanks, Ducky Freeloader.
Quack, quack.
And our next one is Steven. Steven.
Spielbergo? There couldn't possibly be another Steven that would want to meddle at this level.
Right? I mean, Spielbergo will just do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Like, he's really affable in that way.
Mm-hmm.
He'll just be like, can you make a really nonsensical Chinese movie? And he'll fund it.
He'll fund it. Yeah.
He's like, hey, why not? I'm Spielbergo.
Spielbergo.
Some money. I got you.
He's also very proficient in making those knockoff movies that you see like on the DVD stands at the checkout. Disney makes like a Frozen, but then there's like, you know, this other one. Like, it's like
really
a,
cold.
Yeah, really cold. Yeah.
Super chilled.
But he likes to kind of meddle in ones of
Mockbusters.
Like,
Mockbusters.
He's the king of Mockbusters, but specifically Steven Spielberg Mockbusters.
Ooh.
So he just finished directing Kansas Johnson. And the Kooky Crystal Cranium Caper.
Yeah.
And it's on its way to hit number one of the Mockbusters.
And, Schindler's and, Shopping List.
Yeah. Schindler's Shopping List.
East Side Tale.
I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in Mockbusters, apparently, according to Steven Spielberg. So... Thanks.
Yeah. And Cretaceous Water Park.
Cretaceous Water Park. You'll have prehistoric amounts of fun. Anyway, thanks for the Mockbuster money, Spielbergo.
I like how Steven's just the same. And then we have to change Spielberg to Spielbergo.
Yeah.
That's good.
And lastly, we have Eli. So it could be a
from
day.
From the Bible?
Yeah. Eli's also, they're also.
Wait, is there an Eli in the Bible?
It's been a long time since I've read
it. We getting that Bible money? We got that loaves and fishes money?
Oh, yeah. Maybe we can, maybe with this Eli.
You're just
we
multiplying
can, like,
the money?
Yeah. Maybe this Eli can turn all of our water into wine.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
It's a great power.
Of all the superpowers, I have just that. That's
he has
all
just,
I can do.
He has just Jesus powers.
Yeah.
Just Jesus.
That's,
so anything that you've heard of Jesus doing in the Bible is what
Eli can do.
He can take the 40 loaves of bread and fish or whatever, and he can feed a bunch of people. That's it. He can turn water into wine. That's it.
But it's also
raising
like
people from
scenes.
The dead, that's a considerable amount of power.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't know, were they really like, fully dead? Or is he like miracle maxing it from like,
sure,
you
sure.
know,
but you know,
mostly dead.
As a meddling executive, though, he's more interested in raising movies from the dead.
Mm.
You know, they've gone into development hell. He's just
he's like,
rise, I say, and be a movie. It's
and then
great
the rest of his company standing around like, okay. Wait, we actually have to do something? Because we're hammered.
Yeah.
The watering fountain is fucked.
It's just full of wine. His crew's like, I'm so fucking tired of eating bread and fish. You guys can't do it anymore.
His whole office is just full of fountains.
Yeah.
So he can walk
around.
Walk across it. And you always have to walk around the fountains to get out or to get into something. But if you could walk on water, it's a direct route.
Everyone has to like catch up to him.
Yeah.
He just walks a straight line. He has to
walk. Guys see this? You guys checking this out? You should check out this action.
Yeah. Long hair and beard.
What took you guys so long?
This is going to be really embarrassing if there's no Eli in the Bible. Let us know.
I mean, there's Elijah. There's Elijah.
Oh, exactly. It's a short form. See, I know stuff.
Well, thank you so much, meddling executives.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, and if you would like to become a meddling executive or anything else, you can join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/itwasashitshow. Mm-hmm. It's a good time. We mentioned our Discord a couple times. We're in there kind of chatting with people. We release director's cuts of every episode and DVD extras.
Bonus episodes, as we just mentioned earlier in this one, we're all three of us are doing a special where we are talking about our favorite films and most scary films and all that kind of stuff. So if you want to hear those, you got to be on Patreon.
You gotta be on the Patreon.
And if you like hearing about all of my collection of all my just weird random shit, toys, props, costumes, things like that, I do video episodes of all of my collection that you can see. A little bit of a snafu or a snag with my fucking water problems at home. So all my shit's in storage, but it's going to be busted out soon.
We had a flood, and the whole basement was wet. And then Eli came over and turned it to wine, and that shit doesn't come up.
Nope.
Now we have to replace all the carpet because it's got wine stains in it. Thanks, Eli.
I mean, it's not his fault. He just touches it. It just happens.
Yeah. He's well-meaning.
He's an accidental Jesus.
Our own accidental Jesus.
Thank you so much for listening. It Was a Shit Show is researched and produced by me, Ian Jench. Sound editing and mix by Ray Reynolds. Our theme music is by Ryan K. Hudson. Wardrobe provided by Clint's Closet. If you're enjoying the show, you can support us on Patreon or help spread the word by leaving a review and forcing your friends and family to listen. And if you have a shit show suggestion, find us on social media at It Was a Shit Show, but shit without the I. You can also find all these episodes on our YouTube channel.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.